This is the World War II Radio Podcast.
A date which will live in infamy.
This is London.
We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Go ahead, Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome to the World War II Radio Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to present the original radio broadcast from 80 years ago during the days of the war, with the occasional more recent radio program about the war. Today, we have NBC's War Telescope as it aired on April 29, 1944. The series was broadcast from London and offered weekly updates on the war every Saturday, as well as looking at what could be coming in the weeks and months ahead. War correspondent W.W. Chaplin hosts this episode, which this week talks about how the United States is preparing and supplying its soldiers, sailors, and aviators in Great Britain in preparation for the coming invasion. The World War II Radio Podcast is a Brick Pickle Media production. If you like the show, please leave feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Be sure to visit our website at brickpicklemedia.com/podcast, where you find links to past episodes and other information. And a quick note about advertising. We do run ads during the podcast as a way to help cover our costs to produce it. But we know not everyone likes to listen to those ad spots, so we are now offering an ad-free version of the podcast for just 99 cents a month. The link to subscribe is in the show notes, or you can continue to listen to the regular version for free. Either way, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast.
Over in the British capital, replacing John McVane for today's broadcast, this is the War Telescope. And now overseas to the British capital and Bill Chapman. Go ahead in London.
This is W.W. Chaplin in London. The American planes based in Britain have been out again today. Bombing targets, destruction of which will make invasion easier, less costly in life. The German radio says one of those targets was Berlin. We haven't any official word yet on today's bomb tonnage, but you know how it's been running during this pre-invasion blitz of ours. Sometimes almost 5,000 tons in a single day, as much as 20,000 tons in 1 week, and it goes on and on every day. Have you ever wondered where in the world all those bombs come from? How they get from the production line to the plane? Who's responsible for seeing to it that they're there? Well, that's what I'm going to tell you on this War Telescope program today. Or rather, what I'm going to ask the man who's responsible for it all to tell you. To tell you about the bombs and a lot of other things vitally needed all the time by your men who are already in combat, and which will be needed by the undoubtedly far greater number of men who'll be in combat when the big day comes. Here in the studio with me is one of our American generals. I don't recall that he's been in the headlines. He probably won't be, but it's quite possible that he'll be in the history books, credited with a man-sized share of winning the war by a job of organization that simply staggers the imagination. Our guest on the War Telescope today is Brigadier General Henry B. Saylor, Chief Ordnance Officer in the European Theater of Operations. General Saylor, will you please tell us first what our fighting men get from ordnance?
They get all their guns, all their ammunition, all their motor-driven equipment. It's our responsibility in ordnance to see they have those things when they need them and replacements as they go along.
So it's a lot bigger thing than just the supply of bombs that I spoke of. Supplying those bombs is a big job, but it's just one of almost countless jobs for ordnance. Rolling stock from jeeps to tanks, weapons from great railroad guns right down to the paratrooper's Tommy gun. Ammunition for everything. General, how is it humanly possible to keep our men supplied with all those things? I mean, how will it be possible after the invasion is underway?
That's just what I came over here 2 years ago to find out. That's been my assignment from the moment I arrived in England. We've built up a big organization. We've had fine cooperation. I can safely say now that we're ready. Of course, the job never ends. The problem of keeping the flow of weapons and ammunition and vehicles coming across the Atlantic is a constant one, but it's a problem we know how to handle now.
And how big is your organization over here, General?
I can't give you figures on that, for obvious reasons. But I can say that the ordnance organization in this theater is larger than that in any other theater, including the Mediterranean.
Well, General, will you explain this? Of course, we know that, by and large, our men have the best equipment in the world. And, of course, they'll go into action from here fully equipped. But equipment does use itself up, especially ammunition. How do we know that our men are going to find reserves, replenishment of material, on hand when they need it?
It's a business of ordnance to see they have it. Ordnance teams go right in along with the landing parties. Reserve equipment starts right in along with the combat troops and keeps right on coming in after them.
And that, of course, means boats. Does ordnance control motor transport at sea as well as on land?
No, that's a Navy job. We deliver equipment to one beach and pick it up on the other side. Getting it across water is Navy. That's one of the things I had in mind when I spoke of cooperation. The whole plan is worked out as one plan as to how much space goes to ordnance in comparison to space for men and other materials. Then the Navy furnishes that space in the ratio required.
Yes, but suppose something like this should happen. Suppose after the landing has been effected, the men are on shore, the fighting has begun. Then suppose a storm comes up that might delay transport across the channel. Is there any chance that those landing parties might use up all their ammunition before reserve supplies could be delivered? That would put them at the mercy of the enemy.
No, I don't believe that could happen. That's been guarded against. You remember I told you of ordnance teams going in right along or right after the combat waves. Well, they take enough material right with them to keep the fighting men supplied through any conceivable lag thereafter. It's been very carefully worked out, and you can be sure that when conditions call for firing on the enemy, all our men will have the proper weapon at the proper moment and plenty of the proper ammunition to use in it.
Well, that certainly is good news, General. Now, how about the heavy stuff? The tanks, the self-propelled guns, all the big field cannon. How about those? Some of those are inevitably going to get knocked around some or just plain worn out. How about replacing them?
That's all arranged for, too. Take tanks, for instance. Say a tank moving inland is knocked out of action by artillery fire or a bomb. Well, we're notified, and we go right in there with a brand new tank on a big trailer. We turn that tank over for use, and we put the inactive tank on the trailer and haul it back to the beachhead. And back there, and this will be done in a surprisingly short time after the first landings, we'll have repair crews all set to put that tank back into working order. There'll be mobile repair units almost immediately. And very soon, regular fixed repair bases. The same plan will be used for all combat units. And you spoke of guns wearing out. Well, they do under heavy firing conditions, of course. So we have teams that go right along with the artillery and keep testing every gun. Before any barrel is shot out, a new gun is ordered up. So when the old gun is released for repair, the new one is all ready to take up the job.
That is certainly all very interesting, General. Now, I think that I've asked enough specific questions. Won't you tell us now something that you yourself would like to explain to the folks at home? I know that Mrs. Saylor is listening in Washington, and you'd probably just rather tell her about your life over here. But right now, please think of all the families and friends of the men who are going to be fighting on the continent. And tell those folks, something of the way your branch of the service is going to help those men. Perhaps something of the way you feel about your job, about this terrific responsibility you have as Chief Ordnance Officer for the European Theater of Operations. You take the microphone, General, and tell them how it looks to you.
The Ordnance Department is supplying our invasion armies with everything that shoots, with every type of bomb and blockbuster, and everything that rolls from bicycles to tanks. It is supplying some 2,300 separate major combat items and more than 350,000 different kinds of spare parts that are needed to keep all these items in first-class repair. The job of storing all this, of knowing where each item is, and of being ready to furnish battle equipment and replacement parts is a gigantic, never-ending responsibility. Ordnance includes the shells and charges that feed all the weapons, machine guns, cannons, and includes the incidentals necessary to the operation and maintenance of this tremendous firepower. Ordnance also includes the powder charges, the fuses, the tools, the lubricants, and the optical and control instruments. Our armed forces must have weapons of tremendous range and firepower, and weapons that will shoot under any condition. They come from the engineering skills and production techniques of American industry and the Army Ordnance Department. This industry ordnance team is a powerful, efficient, and effective adjunct to American fighting men. This industry ordnance team strives to make the job at hand for these fighting men easier and speedier. The ordnance slogan, Armament for Victory, through the cooperation of American industry and Army ordnance, is the backbone of our industrial strength at home and of our military strength on global battlefields at this hour. In conclusion, I would like to extend a word of high praise to Lieutenant General John C.H. Lee, Deputy Theater Commander, European Theater of Operations, to Major General Levin H. Campbell, Jr., the U.S. Army Chief of Ordnance, and to the very able men with him who have worked tirelessly to make certain that the American soldier is the best equipped fighting man in the world. Major General Gladium M. Barnes, Chief of the Technical Division, Office Chief of Ordnance. Major General Tom Hayes, Chief of the Industrial Service, and Brigadier General Julian S. Hatcher, Chief of Field Service of the Army Ordnance. Truly, ordnance will keep them rolling and shooting. Thank you, Mr. Chaplain.
And thank you, General. We've had the privilege of listening today to Brigadier General Henry B. Saylor, the Chief Ordnance Officer of the European Theater of Operations. I think what he's just told us is one of the most reassuring statements we've had so far in connection with the forthcoming invasion. What his talk has told us, in a nutshell, is that there's no reason for any of us to lie awake at nights, having nightmares about our men caught on a field of battle without full and constantly replenished weapons and ammunition and all the tools with which to defend themselves. That has happened in other wars, in other armies, but General Saylor has spent the past 2 years of his life seeing to it that it won't happen to our army in this war, and he says it won't. Goodness knows those fighting men are going to have it tough enough. It's very good to know that every piece of equipment they need will be ready to their hand when they need it, so they can drive the enemy hard and get this whole business over with just as quickly as is humanly possible, and get back to their home and to you. That's what the generals told us, so I'm sure you all join me in thanking him for bringing us this message today. Thank you, sir. And now we have time for just a few words on the spot news of today. And the spot news today, like most days lately, deals very largely with the invasion. Especially, almost entirely, in fact, the news from Germany does. You remember that about a week ago, they were guessing the invasion would begin this month. Well, they haven't canceled that guess yet. And tomorrow's the last day there is in this month. And right today, German garrisons in the Jutland area of Denmark, they were issued standby orders. Standby orders for our invasion. According to reports reaching us through Stockholm from neutral Sweden, a high state of alarm was declared in that part of Denmark. That's just about the same as a state of siege. So the Germans apparently still feel that their guess about April invasion may still be right. We naturally aren't denying or confirming. We're just keeping quiet and letting the Germans do the worrying. And anyone who doesn't keep quiet enough is dealt with very forcibly. Just today, a woman who was a temporary government employee here was sentenced to 3 months hard labor. She's pleaded guilty to violations of defense regulations. Violations caused by careless talk. This is W.W. Chaplin returning you now to the NBC newsroom in New York.
And so with that report on the war from W.W. Chaplin, NBC staff man in London, we put away the war telescope until next Saturday at this same time. Each week, members of our London staff present special guests in this program of Sidelights on the War. Today, W.W. Chaplin presented as his guest Brigadier General Saylor, Chief of Army Ordnance in the European Theater. Was a presentation of the NBC News and Special Events Department. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast. We hope these old-time radio programs entertain and help you learn more about what Americans experienced during the war 80 years ago. Be sure to visit brickpicklemedia.com/podcast for past episodes and more information